Welcome back to another episode of the Strain Forward Podcast. My name is Kyle Bernier, and today we have a guest on, none other than Mr. Steve Pinkerton. He is actually my former employer. He took a risk on hiring me, and I'll say this for you guys. Steve is one of those dudes that he knows how to, he really, really knows how to be a leader. He knows how to bring the best out of people. He doesn't micromanage. He definitely macromanages, but he's also extremely detailed. He runs a tight ship with CrossFit Vitality. And so today we're going to highlight how he got that started and what it was like overcoming those hurdles, because it's quite a story. And anyone who's ever done a startup probably knows it's a lot of work. And so today, Steve, if you would, give us a quick intro into, I guess, who you are, and then we'll dive into Vitality.
Yeah, man. I grew up in Northern Michigan and then played sports my whole life. I did, if it was competitive, I wanted to be a part of it. And graduated high school, went to college to play basketball to a small college in Michigan. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't a good enough athlete to go anywhere big or to be like a, a prominent figure on any sports team. I just wanted to be a part of something. So I went to college, played basketball for a couple years. Then I played football for a couple years. I joined a fraternity with a bunch of football players that talked me into playing football. And, again, I wasn't great at football. I loved the preparation. I loved the training. I loved the team aspect of it.
Yeah.
And it kept me out of trouble. I mean, I probably would be in prison if I wasn't in sports in college. I graduated college and didn't really know what to do. So the military was something that I had some family friends that, I really looked up to that were, in the army. And so actually the 2 minute story about that is I, applied for, the Army Officer Candidate School program out of college. I was a senior and I had like really good letters of recommendation. I had a super clean record. I did, my PFT test, the physical training test was super, up my alley. I did great. There was nothing. And I was getting ready to go to Fort Benning, Georgia for OCS. My family actually had a party. My parents had a party, hey, Steve's leaving, whatever. Hell, my friends were there. I get a call. My car's loaded. I'm leaving the next morning. I get a call from my Army recruiter. He said, hey, dude, listen, pull over. I want to talk to you about something. I pulled over. He's like, hey, you didn't get selected. I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, man, I don't know what happened. So I literally had no idea. Now I'm this loser that can't even get in the military. I just had a party that was saying I was leaving. Now I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, wow.
So it was a really, that was a gut punch. So fast forward, 4 months later, I walk into a Marine recruiting station and said, hey, I'd like to go be a Marine. And they said, you're too fat and you're too slow. I said, okay. Listen, I said, okay. I was like 265 at the time, And I trained for like 4 months to get ready for the PFT for the Marine Corps, passed it in 4 months. And then I went off to OCS in the Marine Corps. And that was, that's how this whole thing got started. And I tell that story to people to tell them, like, people at the time, there's so many things that go on that are out of our control. But I look back and I have nothing against the Army, nothing. We joke around with the Navy and the Army and the Air Force and all the time about how, they're kind of the sister services of the Marine Corps. But the reality is I don't have any bad blood for them, but I couldn't imagine my life if I would have went in the Army versus the Marine Corps. The experiences that I had in the Marine Corps have made me whatever small amount of success I've had is 100% due to the Marine Corps and the lessons that I learned in that. And I got out of the Marine Corps, and I was in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I had heard about this CrossFit thing, and I opened up a gym with my wife out of our garage. We ran out of our garage for like, 4 months, 3 months. And she didn't kill me. We didn't kill each other. So I was like, okay, I guess this could work. And then we opened up our first brick and mortar in 2009. And we've been doing it for 16, 17 years.
Yeah. So, okay. So back to the military. There's a story you told when I worked with you to me, Nate, and a few others. You told the story of you were about to go on some form of a deployment. I don't want to say you were already deployed, but you were going on like on a mission, I think. And you got, you'd heard stories of people like cramping up and like something happening to them essentially. And so you decided, you're like, that's not going to be me. And so you just hydrate. You drank a ton of water, but you didn't know if you do that without electrolytes, you actually dehydrate yourself.
It's silly what we don't know. I mean, you look back, we were at the basic school. So in the Marine Corps, you have 10 weeks of officer candidate school. And then every officer in the Marine Corps goes to what they call the basic school, which is 6 months, which basically tries to give you an idea of what our roles and responsibilities are. You get to get your occupation determined during that time based on your performance. So it's a pretty important school. And one of the most important pieces, one of the most challenging pieces of that school is land navigation, where they have five or six different evolutions. And one of those evolutions is this 8-hour land nav course where, I mean, it covers miles and miles of terrain. And you're trying to find these stupid little mailboxes that they haven't painted in, you know, 100 years. So they're all faded. And if you go in the summertime, the foliage in Northern Virginia, I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, you have to basically be 10 feet from this box in order to see it.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, you could see it from 800 yards away. Well, I went in the summertime. And what happened was if you don't pass your land nav on Friday or Thursday, then you retake it on Saturday or Sunday of your leave.
Yeah.
So we were having the class before us went, and a bunch of guys cramped up. They got, you know, and I was like, this is crazy. How are you cramping up? I'm like, they must be drinking or doing something stupid. I'm like, listen, that will not be me. I must have drank. I'm not kidding, Kyle. I bet you I drank 3 gallons of water the night before and the morning of, just straight water. Just drinking water. And we get out and we're going to our last point, and it's all individual. You're not allowed to talk to anybody. You're not allowed. You won't see a soul. You're in the middle of miles and miles of forest, and there's this little stream, and it was maybe a foot of water in it. And I stepped down in that stream, and it was like a mucky, you know, sandy bottom. And my boot got stuck. And when I pulled out my boot, my right hamstring and calf cramped up. And I'm like, oh man. I'm like, that sucks. And I pulled my left foot out and my left hamstring cramped in lower body. So I fall backwards in a foot of water. And I'm like, what is going on? And my whole body is now just cramping like crazy. And I'm like, I'm going to be out here. I'm going to drown in a foot of water at this training. I'll be the laughing stock of the world. So I just laid there for a second, kept my mouth above the water and like tried to relax my body. And man, my body was so messed up. I had bruises the next day. I was so sore from all the clamps that I got. But I'll never forget walking back to that finish line to check out, and it looked like I had been through death, dude.
So when you fell backwards, you were actually you were under the water, probably not much, but you had to just stay there and relax.
Yeah, because the more you fought it, my whole body, every time I try to move any appendage, it would cramp.
Dude, that is a crazy story.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was probably terrifying to some degree. Like, you're like, this is it. This is about to happen.
I was more embarrassed than anything. So I'm like, there's no way that this is going to happen. No one's going to find me drowning in a foot of water. It's not going to happen. So
it makes it even better because for people who don't know, Steve is like 6'5", 240 pounds, solid muscle. So drowning in a foot of water would be like, how is this possible?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So back to opening up Vitality. You were working at it. So you were training clients out of your garage for a bit. You decided to pull the trigger on getting a place. I read on a post, I was telling you before we hopped on, a post you put on Instagram where you had talked about like the early days of just getting people to believe in you. What was that like? Because I think a lot of people out there struggle with self-doubt with going into things. And so I'd love to just hear that story.
It was interesting because coming from the Marine Corps, the the operational tempo at the time was so high that we were always either trained or deployed. So the hours were so long. My wife, Jess, at the time, I mean, she would rarely see me. So when we opened the gym, man, to work from whatever, 5 a.m, I'd open in the morning and then I'd close it down at night, to work 14-hour days, it was not different. Like, if you tell me now at 43 years old, after doing this for 16 years, I got to work 14-hour days for 7 days in a row, bro, it'd take me a year to recover from that. But at the time, you know, we're so accustomed to that, it wasn't that big of a deal. And as far as people believing, it was funny because I think I was so all in on that, that it didn't matter. Like people could sense that I was serious. Like this was not a hobby for me. I tell people that we consult with, I said, man, you cannot have another job outside of owning a gym. You just can't. And at the time, this was my only option. I didn't have a fallback plan. I wasn't, you know, moonlighting, doing a different job. This was it. Like, this is what we were going to do for our family, or it wasn't going to work. And I think having that being all bought in, people just recognize the fact, like, man, I really did care about everything that I was saying. So the buy-in wasn't bad. It was just, it moved so fast. Those first couple of years was so busy. And every time you think you figured something out, it would evolve. The training would evolve. The business would evolve. So you were constantly playing this catch up, you know?
Yeah. You know that, what made you, because for those also who don't know, Steve competed in CrossFit and competed at a very, like, very, very high level, like almost made the games, missed it. We don't have to go into the story, but you missed it by like 1 point, which is
1 point.
And maybe we should go into that story because it's crazy. Yeah. But you were incredible. Is that what drove you to want to open the gym, or were you already, you already had the gym?
I already had the gym. And then, you know, it was the it's so silly how, I don't know the word out. I guess I was just immature at the time where if you told me I couldn't do something, man, I was like a child. Like you tell a 10-year-old they can't do something, well, they're going to try and do it even though you know you can't do it. I remember working out and someone had made a comment and said, man, too bad you weren't that big or else you'd have a chance to go to the games. And it was somebody from the headquarters team that was coming down and doing certs at the gym. And I said, well, why am I too big to be at the games? And I was confused because I didn't, you know, he's like, oh, no one, you're 6'5", 2'4", this is not built for big guys. And that right there, just that statement, it just sat in my head. And that was why I was like, okay, cool. You know, you think that I can't do that. We'll see what happens. And that's started like a 7-year journey of, you know, trying to make it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so what's funny is like, so do you know who Alex Hormozi is?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he talks about, you know, like the three characteristics of like a person who's going to be an entrepreneur. And one of them is like this, you have this, I forget the term he uses, but it's like you believe in yourself to the nth degree. Like you just believe it's possible. And I think it makes sense. Like you're an entrepreneur and like you just had that mindset of like, you said I can't do this. I'm going to do it. I believe I can do it. I'm going to show you I can do
it. Yeah.
And I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part when you got into, I mean, I feel like I know the answer is, and you kind of alluded to it, but like, what was the hardest part when you got into training?
Trying to balance being a successful business and, you know, being a dad and a husband and, you know, being competitive, because the thing I hate more than anything is not being prepared. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. If I'm not prepared for it, I hate that feeling. As long as I was prepared, What's interesting on the competitive side was for 4 or 5 years, the regional workouts would come out and I would be hoping that there were certain movements, handstand pushups, muscle ups, whatever it might be. I was hoping those movements were not in there. And the last year, the year that I got the closest and I thought for sure I was going to make it, I felt more prepared than anything. And I didn't care when the workouts came out. I wasn't hoping that anything didn't come out. I was like, man, it doesn't matter what comes out, I'm ready for it. And it just, the mindset of being prepared, that was the difference between everything. If I feel prepared for something, man, the confidence is there. And I think that could be whether it's my kid, you know, going to take a math test or, you know, getting ready for a volleyball game. It's the same thing. It crosses over everything. When you're prepared, there is there's anxiety. There's a little bit of fear, but it's not the fear of like, oh man, I'm not ready for this. It's the fear of like, gosh, I can't wait to do this. And I hope that I do this in a way that, I know I'm capable of.
Yeah. And oftentimes this, I love talking about this fitness and anything, but like oftentimes, like when it is something you are capable of, like, you know, you can crush it. Sometimes that is when you're the most nervous or like, yes, the most excited, because you're like, you know what you're capable of and you know how hard you can actually go. And it's like, if you don't go there, then you know you just let yourself down.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the hardest.
Yes. I was more nervous for Jackie. I'll never forget. Jackie is a workout that, other than being 6'5", you know, I love Jackie. If I was, 5'9", I'd probably love it even more. But that was the most nervous I've ever been for a workout, because finally, for the first time in 50 workouts, there's a workout that was like built for me. And I remember sitting in the back talking to some of the other guys, and they were talking about what their pace was going to be. Well, we had done Jackie probably 30 times leading up to it. I knew exactly what my pace was going to be. I knew exactly every part of it. I knew. And I was talking to guys that, hadn't figured out like what their pace was going to be. And we were talking about my pace, like, oh, that's way too fast. And for a second, I remember thinking to myself, man, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe my pace is too fast. And that's what happens in the world. No matter what we're doing, we let other people dictate what we think, what they think their opinion is, when they have no idea what they're talking about compared to me, and we let that doubt creep in. So it's interesting how this, this fitness thing, it transfers and bleeds into everything else we're doing, because it's that mindset that you have to have that, of course, I don't want to do it like everybody else. If I'm doing what everybody else is doing, then I'm doing something wrong. Yeah. I can't run everybody else's race. I'm going to do mine. And so I think the competition side of it, I think, helped me in the business side of it a lot, where it just gave me those, that experience of adversity. And, I got plenty of humility through the competition, so that was good. But
talk about humility. You saw it when I was competing. I mean, like, workouts that I should have annihilated, coming in dead last on TV. Everyone's watching, clapping when I finished, because they're like, oh, wow, he did it. And it's like, if you guys knew how fast I could actually do this, it's like, that is the worst feeling in the world. Yeah. But it really does, like, that constant, like, being humbled through making mistakes, through whatever happens, like, it does actually change you and transform you as a person, and translates over into everything else to do. Like, so for you, you went military and then you went straight into training super hard, and then you went straight into running a business. It's like all of that culminates into like a person that just has this unshakable will and this unbelievable work ethic that's just like otherwise hard to cultivate.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, I definitely think, the discipline of it is, I just my old man didn't give me the best genetics possible, that's for sure. And I tell him that all the time, like, I'm kind of fighting the old family genes. He was like a private school soccer nerd or something. I'm like, man, could you not have trained a little bit different? Like, I think if I had this discipline to where I no one was going to outwork me. I just didn't have the athletic ability to be able to bridge the gap between, all these guys that compete were so good at so many different things. They were so athletic, and not because of just genetics. I mean, they were just amazing athletes, but I don't think they were any more disciplined than I was. I don't think they were more disciplined with their nutrition or their sleep or their recovery. They just responded differently and better than I did to the training.
Let's just say you weren't a world-class athlete and they were, and you put them both in the same boat where they're doing the exact same things, the exact same discipline and everything, it's like they're still going to just be ahead because they have that genetic element. A lot of people don't want to think about that. Like, they want to think they can out-train genes or outlook genes. And it's like, hey, at the end of the day, like, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
It was very similar for me. Like, I dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's for years and years and years and years. And just like, for whatever reason, like, to this day, I still can't knock out 30 strict handstand pushups. I've buried myself in handstand pushups, dude.
Yeah.
Just, for whatever reason.
Just didn't nobody in their lifetime over a 4-year period did more handstand pushups and muscle ups than I did. And I'm like, dude, I should be the best in the world at handstand pushups. I think that's part of it too, is, you know, we as adults, we rarely do things we're not good at and we don't like doing. And I think training for something like CrossFit forces us out of that comfort zone of, you know what, we are not going to be doing, if you want to be competitive in the sport, you're not going to be doing what you enjoy very often. And, and that's a test to the testament to the people that have made it and stayed competitive for years and years, because they certainly are just hammering weaknesses over and over again. And I think that had I had made it to the games, I look back and say, man, I wish I would have, but if I would have, I wonder if it would have dragged out that competitive career even longer than it really did, because vitality would have never taken off. We wouldn't have built this building if I was competing. I wouldn't have had the time to do both. So part of me is like, you know what? I'm glad it happened the way that it did, because it allowed me to take a step back and put some energy that I was putting into training into other places in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially in a sport like CrossFit, I mean, we can go down that rabbit hole all day long, but CrossFit's different in the sense, like, when you're a professional in CrossFit, it's not like being a professional in the NFL. Like, you don't sign a contract and get paid. You just work out really hard, and maybe you make some money from sponsorships if you've crushed social media. But other than that, like, you're just working out hard because you like to work out hard.
Yep.
So it's a very, like, when you get to a certain point, and I'm kind of at that point now, the trade-off, it's just not there.
Yeah.
You got to start putting it towards something else.
Yeah.
That's a great segue into business. Vitality is thriving. Everything's great. I would love to, I'm assuming everything's great. We haven't been catching up, but knowing you, I'm assuming everything's really great. What's been the biggest thing you've learned over the years in business? I mean, you've said some things when I was there and I kind of remember it, but I'm curious, like, what's been the biggest thing you've learned to be successful?
I think you can never get comfortable with it. I think a lot of people make a mistake and they think that the longer they do it, the easier it becomes. In this, I don't like saying that CrossFit is a unique business, but it really is, because you can do this for 16 years and the problems will never go away. You're still going to have, you know, you still have to keep people excited about training. And for us, I can't keep everybody happy. You know, that's a tough thing with 100 members. You know, in year one, you knew everybody, you could respond to, you know, issues that they have about programming or whatever it might be. They want an extra class time. It becomes really challenging as your membership gets bigger and bigger and your business gets bigger. You have to make decisions that are a little bit different than in the early days. And I think that I took everything personal in the beginning, where if someone left, I was like, gosh, I wish I wouldn't have made, you know, maybe I did something wrong. Maybe my programming's wrong. And over the years, probably, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago, it got a lot easier to where I don't like people leaving. I don't like hearing people that have something bad to say. But what you understand, and you can easily relate this to, if you just scroll through Facebook on any given day, you're going to find people that are just unhappy people. They're just not fun people to be around. The odds of having 600 or 700 members and not having a couple of those transition through the gym is just an unrealistic expectation. And I think that the more I just realize that, hey, you know what? It's okay. This isn't for everybody. I don't have to beg everybody to stay. Now, where you got to be really honest with yourself is the product I'm offering or delivering, is it not up to what the standard should be?
Sure.
And now that's a different story. If you get, yeah, I've always said it, if to the coaches that are here, I say, you know, if you get one person that doesn't understand what you're talking about in a description of a workout or the flow of the class or whatever, it's probably on that person. If you get two, then it's on the coach. So I've always said the rule is if two people have the same problem, you know, in a relatively short period of time, then maybe we need to take a look at, you know, something external that's happening that maybe is a gym problem and not a people problem.
Yeah, that's really great. Wow. Yeah. Not making everyone happy. That's something, I mean, gosh, that's something I'm learning right now too, as I'm doing the social media thing. Like, I've gotten comments on my stuff that like are just hate comments.
Yeah.
And you literally just have to be like, okay, this is part of the game. It just is what it is. People are going to say whatever, and they're probably unhappy with their lives, and you just have to move on past it.
Yeah. And it's hard because you're so vested in whatever it is that we're doing. You know, it's hard not to take it personal. And as soon as you make that mental flip, now don't get me wrong, I'll still get triggered every once in a while, but for the most part, once you realize like, hey, you know what? I can't make everybody happy. And it's not worth me taking it home and being in a bad mood for my kids or Jess. It's not worth that. Like, you know, I'm no longer gonna allow that to happen. And, you know, it's been a process, but it's been much better over the last couple of years for sure.
Yeah. Now, another question I'm curious about selfishly, and I think people out there would be curious too, you know, when you started the business, you were competing, you were running the business, you were a family man, so you were married at the time. Did you have one of your daughters yet?
Reagan was like 1 or 2 years old, 3 years old.
Okay. So what was that? Like, what was that time period like? Because I'll just tell you what I'm imagining. And you tell me if I'm wrong or not. I'm imagining that it was probably really challenging on Jess, and there were probably some conversations that you guys had, and you had to get to a place where you're like, okay, maybe some things need to change. That's what I have the story in my mind. I'm curious what it was like.
I will tell you that any normal human would have those conversations, but again, only because I had transitioned straight from the Marine Corps into this, and you know, being gone for 7 months deployed. You know, she was, I think she just didn't realize how not normal it was for her husband to train doubles on Saturdays, singles on Sundays, and be gone all day Monday through Friday. And I think she also knew how much I wanted to, how much I wanted to do that, how much I wanted to make it to the games. She's, you know, she saw how hard I trained. She saw how disciplined, when I had that ulcerative colitis deal, I mean, she saw me. I still got the spreadsheet. I ate broccoli, avocado, and chicken for like 342 days every meal to fix my gut. I didn't have a protein supplement. I didn't have sugar. I didn't have anything. And every day I would track every time I went to the bathroom, if I had blood in my stool, everything. And at 343 days, I just started adding different things in. I didn't change anything. I just said, okay, now I'll add rice. Now I'll add this. Now I'll add that. So it was like 500 days of that. And I think she saw all of that. And I'm not somebody that was like, social media wasn't a big thing back then. So it was just, I didn't talk about it. That was what we were doing. And she was really the only one that saw it behind the scenes. So when it came time to like bust my chops, she really didn't, you know, on Saturdays, I think she, you know, obviously, she didn't want to see me leave in the morning and get home till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But a lot of times, her and Reagan would come to the gym and just hang out and, you know, mess around while I was trying to finish up. But for the most part, it was just, you know, it was just me. So towards the end is where, you know, she started to get a little bit smarter and realize like, you know what, this is not normal. No one else is having to go through this. Maybe I don't need to. And then we started to have some conversations like, hey, you know, this has been like year five of doing this. You know, our life revolved around that regional window, you know. So
that's really refreshing, honestly. I think that's a very, at least to my knowledge and my experience, that seems to be relatively uncommon. And it sounds like you guys were really like just working together toward a common goal. And I don't say that like facetiously or whatever. Like, it just really sounds like that.
Yeah. I mean, she was, it was such a cool thing because she was part of it in the beginning, but she was also up to her neck in trying to figure out how to be a mom too. I mean, she was trying to figure out how, we didn't know what was going on. No, they forgot to give us a manual on how to do that. And so we were trying to figure that whole piece out and she was trying to balance that. So I think during that time too, it was tough on our marriage just because we never saw each other. You know, I was constantly involved in work and she was constantly involved in doing as much as she could at the gym, but then, you know, being a mom at home. So we would literally just pass each other throughout the day and you know, maybe we'd catch up once or twice a month for like a date night type of deal. And, and that's always been my problem is I tend to get a little bit, locked into whatever it is I'm doing. And man, I have tunnel vision. And once I want to do something, I have a hard time, doing anything else. Everything, all my energy is put into one thing. So I'm working.
Yeah. I've said this before. It's like a lot of times for people, whatever it is that makes them most successful can sometimes be like their biggest downfall as well. It's like
sure.
that driven mindset where it's like, nothing's getting in my way. I'm going to do this. It's also like in other areas where it's like, you have to learn how to pull that back just for the sake of the other things that are priorities and important. Like that's a tough balance to strike for sure.
For sure. And it got even worse once once the new building, I mean, it got even worse. It got even busier. And we were going back to day one at that point for the time I was gone.
So here, let's wrap up with this because I know you got to get rolling and Mr. Matt, we got to go down for a nap here in a minute. All right. So I think it'd be really cool if for young entrepreneurs out there listening, let's just hopefully a young entrepreneur out there is listening. I'm one of them. So you can just talk to me. What would you say? Like, what's the piece of advice you would give to a young entrepreneur starting that like you could go back and tell your younger self?
I was pretty ignorant when I thought I could build this building. That's the part where I think starting Vitality was a little bit of a leap. You know, leaving the Marine Corps for to start an affiliate of CrossFit at the time was kind of crazy. My dad would say it was very crazy. He was not he believed in me, but at the same time, he's like, dude, what are you doing? You're going to charge people a ton of money to go to a gym with no AC and crush people's souls. I said, yeah, it sounds crazy, but I think it'll work. So that was a leap, but the biggest leap and the biggest part of my ignorance was I thought I could just build this building because I knew I could fill it with tenants. I knew I could fill it with, members that had businesses that wanted to be a part of it. And I just didn't understand the finances of it. I didn't understand what it took from a planning part of it. And I thought I could just will it to happen. And I think that's the part where is if I would tell anybody that if they think it's going to be easy, if they think like that, you got all these crazy social media people that are like, oh, well, if it's meant to be, it'll just happen. It'll fall into place. I promise you, the bigger the idea you have, the further it will ever come to falling into place and just everything working out. You will have to force a square peg into a round hole time after time after time again. And I think that's the part where I didn't realize that until I was so pot committed to this building that I couldn't turn back. I still remember that we were probably 10 months late opening the new building. And I remember about a month before we opened, I looked at Jess one night and I said, man, if I could unwind all of it and go back to our old spot and just keep on going, I would do it in an instant. And that was the first time I'd ever said that to her. And she thought I was joking. And then she realized I was dead serious. Like we had a successful business at the time before we made this move. We had a successful business. I had five LOIs, letter of intents for my tenants, new tenants that had been signed, and I had their rent already. And the bank would not give me money. They would not loan me the money. So I went through the whole process thinking it was going to be this first bank we went with. So we went through everything. Just to give you an idea, the architectural drawings I had to have in order for the bank to give me the loan were $88,000. So I was $88,000 in before I even knew I had the money. And I was so ignorant. I was like, of course they're going to give me the money. I've got these tenants lined up. I've got 4 years of financials. I'm moving a mile away, so I'm not losing any of my members. They can see that. It's obvious. And then when they told me no, I was like, oh, geez. Well, then you go to another bank and you go through the whole process again. And it's like a 3-month process. So as we're going through this process, we're getting plans finalized. I'm meeting with the cities trying to get, make sure that our utilities are in the right spot, make sure everything's ready to go. And I've already scheduled the dirt work to start getting ready to move dirt at the spot and clear the site out.
Oh my God.
And now I have no bank financing. Well, I can't go back to those guys and be like, hey guys, just hold off on it a little bit. If I go back to them and tell them to hold off, they'll punt me all the way to the back of the queue and I'll wait another 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. You're done.
So you're going bank to bank to bank. It was like the 10th bank that I went to that finally said, yes, we'll do it. And the only reason he did it was because it was owned by a former Marine. And I remember having to talk to the guy that owned the bank, and he called me and said, hey, I got this crazy request for this loan. Are you out of your mind? I said, sir, no, I promise you this will work. And the terms were not great. He said, look, I'll give you the money, but it's not going to be an easy thing to get out of.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, okay. So that was the first part where you're like, oh man, this is interesting. Well, then the second part of my ignorance was, as you're drawing these things out, I'm getting more tenants that want to come and be a part of it. I'm like, well, geez, let's just add 20 feet to the building, and then I have another spot for another tenant, because why wouldn't I if they're going to pay me $5,000 to $6,000 a month? So I add 20 feet to the building, not understanding that adding 20 feet to a building doesn't sound like a lot, but you're going to add about 3,000 square feet, and you're going to have to add more AC, more plumbing, more metal, more siding, more stone, more concrete, more walls, more paint, more furniture, more everything.
All of it.
So we get about halfway through this project, and I'm running the numbers of all the incoming bills that we've got, and we're like $750,000 short. And that was the spot, man. That's the spot where I remember exactly where I was at. I remember driving home being like, oh man, no one's going to give me $750,000. Yeah. Like, this isn't one of those things where I can just be like, oops, sorry, you know, someone will loan me some money. No. Yeah. So I remember thinking I had two options. I could go ask the bank for more money and they're going to tell me no. And now they're going to know that I'm short and they're probably going to stop everything. Or I wait and I get further down the road to where they get to a point where I force their hand, where they either have a building that's almost completed. Cause the 750 really wasn't going to come until the very end when you start putting HVAC units, your electrical in there. So we could finish the building at least. So we finished the building, and then I went to the bank and said, hey guys, listen, I'm not proud of myself, but we're $750,000 short and you've got two options. You can either take this project over, which I know you don't want to do, finish it and then try and sell this building, or you can give me $750,000. Let me finish it, and I promise you this will work. And man, I'll tell you what.
Dude, that's crazy.
It was the most, oh man, my stomach, just talking about it, my stomach hurts because I remember that conversation. I haven't got yelled at like that since I'd been in the Marine Corps, since I'd been like an officer candidate on the hard deck of Quantico, Virginia. I mean, he was like, dude, I took a chance on you. You're screwing me. You're going to do it. I said, listen, sir, I get it. I understand, but I've got no other option. And I think he realized like it really was the only play that I had left. So when we opened January of 2016, man, there was nobody on this earth that was more motivated to make this work than I was.
You didn't have a choice. That's it. Bank of America, like that's it.
And people don't understand, like, when you sign a loan for that, you got your house, your cars. I owned nothing. I owned nothing because everything I owned was tied to that building. Everything. And I think that that's, I guess that's what I'm, I would tell people, as crazy as it was, man, if you don't give yourself a parachute, you'll think about things differently, you know? So.
You listen to Hormozy, Alex Hormozy. He talks about that. He's got the five phases, but the first three are uninformed optimism, where you're like, oh, this is going to be awesome, the new thing. And then you have informed pessimism, where you're like, oh, this is going to be really hard. And then you have the valley of despair. And what he says is most entrepreneurs, they get to the valley of despair and they just go back to uninformed optimism with a new thing. And they just run that cycle. But yeah. You're saying you got to the valley of despair with no way up the mountain other than just like, I guess I have to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Hormozy had a really good one. I just sent to one of my buddies. He was getting ready to go do a big ruck. And I'll butcher. I'll text it to you when I'm done. But it basically was him saying how he reframed his mentality to where it wasn't like, oh, poor me, poor everyone else who's got to try and do what I just did. And man, when I heard that, it just everything that you know, this whole process, it just it made so much sense to me that so many people, man, I get it. So many people. They want the ending, but they're so afraid of that. They're not afraid because they don't even know about it. They're just not willing to take all of the pain that goes with it. But man, there's nothing worthwhile that I was just having this conversation with my 16-year-old daughter. Like, there's nothing worthwhile that's not going to be hard. If it's not hard, what's the point of even doing it? Like, what do you get out of it? There's nothing. I don't want to do it unless. I don't want to do what everybody else can do. I want to do something that is gonna change the way I look at the world. It's gonna change the way that I view things. And if it doesn't do that, you know, now at the old age of 43, I'm not doing it. You know, that's why I started jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu has been the best, most fun thing I've ever done in my life. More fun than CrossFit. More fun than anything. And the reason is, it's because I suck, and I can go back to being a student again. And every day I go in there, no one's asking me anything because they know I don't know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for 3.5 years. I'm a nobody. But the process, it's the process. And that's why I tell everybody, that's my new obsession, because it just it forces you so far out of your comfort zone that, you know, now every day I have to deal with humility and adversity and trying to reprogram the way my brain thinks, the way my body's supposed to move. I love it.
That's so awesome. It's also extremely terrifying because I told Nate this too. I said, Steve with his giant beard at 6'5", actually able to literally kill you in a moment already. And now him learning jiu-jitsu is absolutely terrifying. But no, that's really cool, man. And I think it's awesome for people out there to hear that from someone who is 43 years old, like, quote unquote, it's not old, but like older, right?
Yep.
And you're successful. So it's like, there's not really a reason for you to do it. Like, there's no reason. Like, you don't have to go do it. But the fact that you're doing that just sheds light on the fact that we constantly need to be investing in ourselves and doing things that scare us and challenge us and all the things.
Yeah. And that, I mean, look, that's why that's what makes sense about this podcast you're doing. It'll force you to figure out a different way to manage your schedule, manage your time. Now you've got this other reach that's going to possibly get out there to different people. I mean, so many people talk about doing things, but they never do it. They're just idea guys. And it's, everybody can have great ideas. The implementation is where you make your money. You know, that's my guy right there.
Mav's coming in to say hi.
I love it.
Steve. Oh, you're doing great.
That's Mike.
No, it's not mine. We're wrapping up right now, buddy. Well, dude, I appreciate your time, man. And I really appreciate you sharing this. You guys out there listening, go look up. Where can people find you? You're just, is it CrossFit Vitality? What's your Instagram?
We do Vitality Fitness. And then my Instagram is just Steve_Pinkerton. I don't post a lot anymore. We don't do a great job with social media. Phil... You remember Phil. Phil will post some stuff to Vitality Fitness NC every once in a while on Instagram, and we'll try and keep a good presence. But it's a, man, social media is a tough thing, dude. It's a tough it's a tough nut to crack. And wait till Mav gets a little bit older, man. It'll be your biggest challenge, the biggest challenge by far as a parent, not even remotely close second, is social media. We either figure out how to deal with this, or it will destroy generations. I can see it from a mile away, what it's doing to the teenagers out there right now, my teenagers. This thing, what it does to adults. We are so connected to this device and what it gives us, that dopamine, that whatever that dopamine hit that we get from seeing a comment or whatever. It's the most dangerous thing. So I hope we can figure it out, because I have not figured it out for my kids yet, and I know it. Like, I understand how dangerous it is, and I it's a very difficult thing to navigate.
Yeah, no, it really is. That has been a challenge for me as I've stepped into this too. I promised myself when I started I wanted to do this for good, and I've really tried to hold myself to that standard of everything I'm producing and getting out there is like actually trying to help people. But sometimes it's almost like when you're driving, it's like when you tell your kids, it's like, I'm not worried about you driving, I'm worried about other people. You know, so like you pull up social media and like you just don't know what's gonna pop up, and sometimes what does just is not good for your brain. And that can be severely challenging.
Yeah, and that's us talking as adults. Now you equate that to these kids that can't quite understand the dangers of it. Man. Yeah. So
that's we should have another podcast on that, because that's a whole, I mean, golly, that's just
Well, listen, dude, I appreciate the time, and I wish you the best of luck with this new podcast, bro. Anything I can do to help you, let me know.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you. You guys go out there, find Mr. Pinkerton. He's amazing. So love you, bro. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it, dude. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you,
bro.